This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
It was an idyllic marriage. John and Marion were high school sweethearts who married and then began a successful life together. John was an internationally respected scientist in his field, and Marion was a businesswoman in her family's firm. They settled in Victoria with their three children, but then something very unexpected happened. John was struck by what eventually was diagnosed as late-onset schizophrenia, and Marion was left struggling to hold their family together.
The story of what happens when the mind betrays you, written by Marion, is called Unfaithful Mind. It's Marion Gibson's first book, and she spoke with People First Radio's Nancy McInnes in March 2014. Here's that conversation.
At the time of your husband John's mental health crisis at age 45, you and John had been teenage sweethearts and had 27 years of happy marriage and three children between you. Tell us what happened.
Basically, I had been out of town on a business trip, and the day that I was due to return home, my husband called me from Victoria, and I was in Toronto, and he said to me, Mayor, I'm sick. I'm really, really sick. I've called 911. And I said, well, what kind of sick are you? What's the matter with you? And he said, they're here now. I gotta go. And he hung up the phone. That was very shocking at the time to receive a phone call like that. My children were at home with him at the time. It was early in the morning. The paramedics and the police and an ambulance team, basically, it was a full entourage of first responders came to our home and talked John into going to the hospital. They recognized that it was a mental health issue, and they convinced him to go to the hospital by ambulance.
So what did you think was happening?
I had no idea. It was completely caught off guard. I hadn't a clue. The first thing that came to my mind was something like a brain aneurysm that had burst or in his head. Something physical was where my mind was taking me. I didn't really want to think about the possibility of mental illness. It never really occurred to me. My husband's a very bright man. He works very hard. He has a responsible position at work. He's a scientist. And it never really occurred to me until later on in the day that this was a mental health issue. I did speak with a police officer from my home, and he asked me if my husband used any drugs or alcohol, and I said no. And they said, okay, that they would be taking him to the hospital. Mm-hmm. So that's all the information I got until I could catch a plane and come home back to Victoria. And it took me most of the day to get back. It was very shocking, and I just couldn't believe what was happening. I was very concerned for the safety of my kids. Two were teenagers, and one was just a younger. He was about 8 at the time. So I was really nervous and really, really scared for them. I phoned a friend and asked a friend to come over to the house and just make sure the kids left. And I didn't really want them here during all that.
Where did you go for help?
Well, the morning that John was taken to the hospital, he told the doctor that he thought he had been poisoned. And he also told that to the first responders. And that's what he was checked for. So when they did blood tests and a urine analysis, his blood tests all came back fine. His urine test was clean, and they said he was free to go home. He did not complain that he was hearing any strange sounds. He didn't complain that he thought he'd been poisoned. He also thought that I was trying to kill him, and he had a great kind of a plot or a scheme going on in his head where he thought I was trying to kill him along with the help of my family. He was discharged from the hospital, so the first couple of days we didn't get any help at all. John did go back the next day and checked himself in. He recognized that he was very ill. He still wasn't sure himself what it was, and he was afraid to admit to anybody. He was very paranoid, so he wasn't really telling the truth to anybody what was happening. So he only spent a few days in the hospital. I went in and met with a social worker who told me, yes, this is a mental health issue. And we were left to deal with our family doctor to help us out. So the only help we did get was from the family doctor, who it took a few more days to get an appointment to go visit with. And we explained to him what happened, and he read the hospital reports. We spent the next month visiting the family doctor about once a week. And at that time, John wasn't given any medication to help him over the situation. He was given some Ativan, which was an anxiety medication, really, but nothing to help the mental health problems, because the doctor really needed to see what was happening to him before he could medicate him. And that medication didn't come for about a month.
That must have been a very long month.
It was extremely long. I couldn't work, and John was advised by his family doctor to stay home and not go to work and treat this as a brain injury. And he needed time to rest and relax and try and stay calm as much as he could. And it was very scary for us. It was hard to explain to our kids what was happening, but we tried to be as honest as we could and let the two older ones, especially them, to understand what was happening with their dad. They were very okay with it. They were very understanding. It was a very long month because, you know, two people who are used to working are now in the house, really confined to the home with each other all day, every day. There were a lot of things that were going on in John's head. There was a lot of conflict between us because he was so paranoid and he was experiencing delusions and auditory hallucinations, and he was afraid to eat anything in our home, and he was not himself. It was very, very confusing and scary for us because we didn't have any experience with mental illness. We didn't understand what was happening, and our only resources pretty much at this time were the internet, and we were trying to read about different kinds of mental illnesses to see what was happening with John. We were trying to read and gather as much information as we could.
So it doesn't sound as if there were very many resources that you were able to access in the early days.
No, there weren't. My visits to the hospital and to the family doctor, I didn't even get a pamphlet or a piece of paper or a list of resources to go to find, to look up any kind of information. I spent time at the library, and I spent time on the internet trying to learn about mental illness as much as I could. And I basically was trying to cross-match as many symptoms as I could recognize in John with symptoms and different types of mental illnesses that I was learning about.
It sounds like you have quite a bit of internal resources that you were able to call on. It must be a lot tougher for people that don't have that ability.
You're right. For people that don't know where to look or how to look up this kind of information or where to go, it's a very arduous process. It's very difficult to find information. And a lot of the terms are medical terms. And if you don't have a background in medicine, which we didn't, then you have to start looking up definitions and start trying to understand what the article that you're reading or the information that you're learning about. You have to keep digging and keep digging to learn what all this means and to process it all. You know, and the whole time we're still in shock and still trying to accept the fact that, you know, that John had a very serious mental illness, trying to hold it together with our kids and trying to keep their routine and, you know, getting them to school every day and just making lunches. It was a very difficult task trying to run a household at the same time.
And I'm sure that was a high priority for you, was to try and keep things as normal as possible for your kids.
For our kids, yes, definitely. The keeping things normal for the kids and making sure they didn't miss any of their activities or their lessons, and, you know, even cooking their dinner it was a difficult task, and it seemed humongous at the time. Some days it was hard because I couldn't really leave John home alone with the kids, and just, you know, taking him everywhere with me and just trying to get groceries done was a bit of a... It was difficult. This lasted for a few months. Even after the first month, the doctor did ask John to start a medication, an antipsychotic medication that would help him, but it really wasn't helping him at the time. It didn't really stop the effects of the illness, and the symptoms of the illness kept progressing during the next 4 months. So, you know, it doesn't seem like a long time now, but at the time that it was happening, those 4 months were very difficult because John kept accusing me of things that weren't true and things that affected our marriage, very intimate and personal things. And he was verbally attacking me and then trying to go to bed at night, you know, and try to keep these conversations from getting too heated, mm-hmm. and sheltering the kids from it at the same time. We were crazy times, that's for sure.
Yeah. When I read your book, I was impressed by your courage and your commitment to stay together You seemed able to keep focused on John's true nature and the value of your relationship, even in the face of his delusions and accusations. How did you do that?
I think having children really motivates you to try and keep your marriage together. And the fact that the more I learned about mental illness, the more I realized that this wasn't really John talking. This wasn't really who my husband was or who he appeared to be at the time. One thing I learned really early on was that it's not him, it was the illness. And if I could address the illness and fix the illness, then I would get my husband back. Mm-hmm. And that's really what kept me focused. And the history that we had together, we'd been together from teenagers in high school, almost 30 years, like 27 years together. I just couldn't see, it never even it came into my mind really that this was going to be the end for us. I mean, there were certainly days where, I mean, I did ask him to leave the house a couple times, and there certainly were days that I felt like maybe this will be the end of our marriage, but I never really got to the point that I was going to throw it in and walk away. I did realize he was very sick and felt the responsibility as a spouse to help him through this.
Is there any last thing you'd like to say?
The only thing that I would really encourage anybody who's going through a similar situation is to seek out as much knowledge and information as you can so that you're very aware of what's happening and what your options are, and not to give up on the person because they cannot be an advocate for themselves. They need somebody fighting for them and somebody helping them through this ordeal so that they can eventually help themselves and put their life back together.
Thank you for joining us today. It was much appreciated.
Thank you for having me.
Marian Gibson's book is called Unfaithful Mind. You can find it online at amazon.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.